Well, welcome back to week 5 of the Connecting the Dots series. Over the past several weeks in this series, we've been looking at the book of Genesis, and we've been learning from the life and story of Joseph. And you know, it's been a really good story. But I have to tell you that during this series, it hasn't always been the most uplifting of stories that we've been looking at. I mean, think about it. We've seen Joseph go through some hard stuff. He's been thrown into a pit by his brothers. He's been betrayed by the important people in his life. He's been thrown in jail. He's been forgotten about by the people that he helped. And he's really watched every dream that he's had be put on the back burner, just waiting for something, anything, to finally go right. And so finally today, we're there. We're at the happy part of Joseph's story. I'm really excited about it. I don't know about you. No one is in a pit anymore. Those jealous brothers are out of the picture. He's got a great job, a wife and 2 kids. Life finally seems like it's working out for Joseph. And as I read this next chapter of Joseph's story, the word that immediately came to my mind is joy. We see Joseph getting to use his gifts. We see him creating a family. We see all of that hard stuff he'd been through in the past finally be part of the past and not part of his present. And it feels like it's about time. Joseph has been through so much, more downs than ups, and if anyone deserves a break, it has to be him. And so if the story of Joseph was a movie, I think it'd be right about now that we'd be all breathing a sigh of relief, watching the credits roll up. We'd be getting off the couch, going on to bed, and we'd think, wow, that's great. That movie had an actually nice, happily resolved ending. I like that kind of movie. And if we thought that, we'd be right, kind of. We are to the good part of Joseph's story, but Joseph's story isn't over quite yet. So before we write this off as just another one of those stories with a happy ending, before we assume that there's nothing more to see or learn here, I want to ask you a question. And it's the question that came up for me when I watched that video that we saw at the top of the service. When did you last feel joy? Think about it. In the middle of your busy life, when did you last slow down to just enjoy it? In the middle of that ongoing struggle that just won't let up, when have you taken time to get a glimpse of the good things going on around you? When was the last time that you took some time to lay out all the places of joy in your life and really see that big picture clearly? You know, if we're not careful, it can be really easy for us to miss out on the joy that's right in front of us. After all, we've got to-do lists to check off. We've got schedules to stick to. We might have some conflict in the family. Some of us have long and difficult pasts that we're still working to untangle. It's all part of it. And sometimes it feels like, you know, if we could just get all these dots to connect, if we could just get all of that stuff taken care of and off of our list, then and only then would we be able to experience joy. But you know what? We don't have to wait. You don't actually have to wait to connect all the dots. You don't have to heal all the pain. You don't have to figure out every piece of the puzzle to see the joy that's right in front of you. And in Joseph's story, and even in our own, there's plenty of room for both the things that are complicated, that are messy, that are hard, and an awful lot of joy. There's room for both if we can just see it. And sometimes it's in the seasons that feel the most complicated, when we face the hardest things, that joy can be at work the most. You know, one of my friends from seminary, Angela Williams Garrell, she actually wrote a book about this called The Gravity of Joy. And in this book, she uses her own story to talk about this exact same thing. In the book, she tells about a season of her life when experiencing joy seemed almost impossible for her. In the span of just a few weeks, she lost 3 close family members, including her own father. And this was all happening, all this pain was going on, while she was simultaneously starting a new job, a faculty position at Yale, where she was teaching on and researching, you will not believe this, joy. So imagine it. Her whole work life involved talking to people, writing about, teaching classes about what made for a joyful life. And meanwhile, in her personal life, joy couldn't have seemed more out of reach for her. And so Angela's story that she tells in this book is incredibly powerful. And I really loved one of the quotes that she shares in it. And it sums up some of her research and what she was discovering joy to really be in that season. It says that joy is what we feel when what is lost is found, what was missing is restored, what was constrained is lifted, what we desire arrives, or what arrives satisfies a desire we didn't know we had. So I'm curious if you've ever thought about joy in that way. I really like this definition of joy because it's got a little bit more depth to it than just saying, well, everything worked out great, everything's going fine. It's a little bit more nuanced than saying, well, I'm just feeling really happy right now. I think that this definition of joy speaks to the fact that no matter who we are, no matter what our stories look like, we're all people who are longing and looking for something. And we're all people who are trying to connect the dots. So that's really encouraging to me. Because no matter where you are in that process, whether you feel like those connections are pretty clear, that they're made already, or if it feels like those dots are just more like a jumbled mess off to the side, no matter where you are, it reminds us that joy is possible. When we have more questions than answers, joy is possible. When we're sitting with disappointment that won't let up, joy is possible. When we're living life on autopilot, just trying to get through the day and get stuff done, even then, joy is possible. And the story of Joseph is a living example of the possibility of joy. Because remember, a lot has happened before this happy, joyful point in the story. Even though things are going well now, for so long, they absolutely did not. There's been hard time after hard time after hard time, and yet, even through all of it, Joseph can see that God's been up to something. And Joseph claims this truth about joy in a really interesting and powerful way when he names his children. Now, I'll tell you, naming our kids was really important to me. I was that person that had, you know, the stack of baby books on the coffee table. I had the notes app open on my phone with like 25 different baby name combinations. I was very invested in this task at hand. But as into naming my kids as I was, I could never have predicted just how well their names have fit them as they've grown into these little people that they're becoming. Our oldest is named Hazel, which means wisdom. And if you know her, you know that that fits pretty well. She is almost 8 years old, and she is wise, she is curious. We have a joke in our house, which is only kind of a half joke, that she is the most responsible member of our family. And then our son Reese, his name means enthusiasm. Now, if you know him, you know that also fits very accurately. He gets this little report card from soccer every few weeks, and every single time he scores the highest on participates with enthusiasm. So it fits. And it's been a fun surprise for us to see just how our kids have lived into these names that we gave them. But as we look at how Joseph names his children, he's not just giving them a name that is like an aspiration for what they might be or what they might do, but he's actually naming a truth about where he's been and about what the future might hold. His first son's named Manasseh, and that name means that God has made me forget all my hardship and all my father's house. His second son is named Ephraim, and that means for God has made me fruitful in the land of my misfortunes. So these names, they're more than just names. These names tell a story and they claim a truth. They say, no, life has not been easy, but God has been faithful and joy is possible. And these names show a choice that Joseph's made. Because even though Joseph has the scars, he has the trauma to prove that his life has been hard, that's not actually what he decides to lead with into this next season of his life. And instead of building a future around the things that have failed him, and there would be plenty of material for him to do just that, but instead of doing that, instead of becoming a bitter and spiteful person, Joseph actually chooses a different way. Joseph chooses to see clearly how God has been with him every difficult step of the journey. And now Joseph can see joy and he can see hope, and that's where Joseph starts to actually connect all of these dots in what's happened in his life. And he starts to build this new future going forward. And here's what's so powerful about what Joseph's doing. He's moving on, but he's moving on with a different mindset. Now, it's not that Joseph is trying to forget about or deny the past. I mean, look at his kids' names, hardship, misfortune. It's all right there. I don't think that Joseph is in denial. But what I do think Joseph is doing is he's letting his joy be bigger than that pain that he's experienced. And if you're someone today that you've been through something that you still can't shake, or you're going through it right this very minute, there is a huge lesson in this choice that Joseph makes for us. See, our ability to feel joy, it doesn't require us to erase the grief that we've experienced. I'd say I don't even think it requires us to be fully over or healed from that grief. Sometimes when we go through something, we can feel a lot of pressure to just, you know, shake it off, get over it, move on, be okay. But I don't think that's what joy actually asks us to do. Because joy doesn't ever promise to take away the memory of what hurt. Joy doesn't promise that the pain will just get erased completely. But here's what joy does do. Joy dilutes pain's power. And when we let that happen, when we let joy in like that, joy starts to change our perspective. It helps us see clearly because it lets us look at life in a new way. And as we look back over our stories, instead of just seeing the series of endings over and over again, we start to see beginnings. We start to see the way that God was working all around us the whole time. Joy starts to open us up to things that maybe we couldn't see before, and it lets us be curious instead of cynical for what might come next. So if we want this joy, if we know what God can do, and if we believe that joy is possible, the natural next question for me is, well then, okay, how do we find it? How do we not miss that joy and those opportunities in the middle of all the things that we've already named? And now, if you know me, you're not going to be surprised where I turned. I should say who I turned to for this answer. And for those of you that are already laughing because you know exactly whose name I'm going to say, I promise you, I tried to find a better source, a different source than quoting Brené Brown again in a sermon. I know. I Googled. I podcasted. I tried so hard. But at the end of the day, it is a Pastor Mindy sermon, and yes, I am going to quote Brené Brown. So just get comfortable, get ready to receive a great lesson. It's all going to be okay. I've been listening to her podcast this summer. It's called Unlocking Us, and you won't be surprised. I think it's fantastic. I highly recommend it. But I've been listening to it this summer, and one day, she was talking about the relationship between joy and gratitude. And this was really fascinating to me, because she was sharing that for years, she assumed that joyful people were grateful people. And I don't think that's really that groundbreaking. It makes sense to me. You know, if you've got a lot of joy in your life, if things are going well, it seems like you would naturally lend yourself to having a lot of gratitude. But here's where it got interesting for me. She went on to say that as she researched for one of her books, she found out that she was wrong. Because it wasn't that joyful people were grateful. It was that grateful people were joyful. So do you hear the difference there? I know it's a little tricky, and it might even for some of you be like, okay, it's just word order, it's just semantics. But I want us to sit here for a second, because I think there's actually a huge implication for us if we understand that difference. See, the research that she was looking at, it didn't support the idea that an easy or a good life is what brings people joy. What it did show was that a consistent practice of gratitude gives us the ability to experience joy no matter what. And so more than anything, gratitude was the thing that breeds joy in our lives. Gratitude gives us this access to joy that we didn't know that we had. And it's in those moments where we want to believe that, you know what, joy isn't for me, there's no way, I can't find it. We just have to start there with a simple practice of gratitude. And I know that might sound a little bit elementary to some of you, it might sound overly simple, but I think that that basic act of just naming the things that we're grateful for, that can be the one thing that opens the door for joy to creep in, even when we're sure that there's no way that can possibly be part of our story right now. And if we take the time, if we make the space, I really believe gratitude can be that spark that starts to lead us toward joy. And it's those many little sparks and that commitment to seeing our circumstances clearly that can make all the difference in our lives. Because think about Joseph's story. Joseph didn't just accidentally stumble onto joy because things got better in his life. That's the temptation as we read the story, to think that's how it went. But that's not what happened. His joy that he felt, that was a result of a lifelong practice of turning to and trusting God and watching how God was working in the middle of those difficult circumstances, those hardest times in his life. That's what set him up to have joy in the first place. Because the thing about Joseph's story, the truth that sits with me is that Joseph could have had the tide change. He could have had things start going right for him. He could have had all the success in the world. And you know what? He still could have missed it. He still could have missed out on joy. I think we all know people like this. We've all seen these kinds of stories. And the truth is, if you're someone who's been waiting for joy to just show up, if you keep thinking, okay, if I can just get to this point, joy will come for me. If I can just experience this, I'll finally get to see joy. The hard truth I have to tell you today is that a change in circumstance does not guarantee a shift in your perspective. That is the spiritual work that we get to do. The spiritual work for us is that whether we're in the best time of our lives or the worst time in our lives, no matter what is going on around us, we can still make a commitment right now to look toward God and to start trying to find joy and gratitude. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not up here to be like your cheerleader this Sunday morning. Sometimes this process is a fight. It's a fight to find joy. It doesn't always come quickly. It doesn't always come easily. And I know that sometimes we can be in those moments and we can just feel stuck. But I think it's worth it. I think finding joy is worth it, and getting unstuck actually matters so much. Not just for us, but for the world and the people around us. And so that's the final lesson that we learn from this part of Joseph's story. We learn that our joy is bigger than just ourselves. Let's look at verses 48 and 49 to see what this is all about in Joseph's story. It says, he gathered up all the food of the 7 years when there was plenty in the land of Egypt. And he stored up the food in cities. He stored up in every city the food from the fields around it. So Joseph stored up grain in such abundance, like the sand of the sea, that he stopped measuring it. It was beyond measure. So what's happening here is that we see Joseph's ability to move forward with joy actually has an impact. And in these verses, he's doing the work of storing up food because they know a famine's coming, and this famine will be so bad that it has potential to wipe out this whole country that Joseph is now in charge of. So the stakes are really high here. His doing this work and his doing this work well, it matters. But I want you to imagine with me for just a minute how this story could have ended. Imagine what would have happened if Joseph had gone into this new season full of success, but with a bitter and joyless heart. Imagine what would have happened if Joseph had looked at the task before him to save Egypt from this famine, and if he had said, well, okay, the people in this country, they did me wrong over and over again. Their leaders threw me into jail. They forgot about me when the time was important. I was nothing to these people for years. So you're going to starve to death from a famine? Good luck. I mean, can you imagine the consequences of choosing bitterness instead of joy in this story would have been catastrophic. But thankfully, that's not what happens. Joseph isn't bitter, and his joy has led him to a new place where he not only moves on, but he's now able to see the bigger picture. And all of a sudden, it's not just about his pain and his own story, but he sees himself as someone who's been created for a bigger purpose. And I think sometimes when we think about our own spiritual work, we start to think that, well, it's just about us. It's just about what happens between me and God, and it doesn't really matter for everyone else around me. We start to believe that maybe our stories are pretty insignificant, that they don't have a very big reach. And I understand why we think that way, especially when we look at a story like Joseph's. I mean, his story feels big, it's significant, it's in the Bible, we're talking about it right now. But I don't want you to stay in that place. I don't want you to believe it's just Joseph, because it's not. It's you and it's me. And the fact that what we let God do in here inside of us, it impacts what happens out there. Every single thing that we've talked about today, all of the work that it takes to see our stories clearly, to fight for joy, it's not just good for us, and it is good for us, but it's good for the world too. And so, as we end our sermon today, I have to confess something to you. I really struggled with how to end this message because I really wanted to end with some profound and inspirational story. And it seemed like that'd be really easy because, hello, the Olympics are on this week. I don't know about you. I've been staying up way too late every night to watch it. Like, it seemed like this would be an easy win to find an inspirational story, tell it to you. We'd all leave feeling really good and warm and fuzzy. It'd be great. But that just didn't feel right to me. And I think I couldn't do it because I want you to walk away from this message not believing that this story of joy is just true for someone else and excludes you from the picture. I want you to know that this is true for you too. And so I'm going to end today by telling you a little bit about my own spiritual work, my own work to see clearly, to connect the dots, and to choose joy in a hard season. And I'm going to tell you, this is a work in progress, so let's have grace for even your preacher this morning. But many of you know that in 2020, our son Reese, that child who personifies enthusiasm, he had a health crisis, and he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. So we've lived with this diagnosis for over a year now, almost a year and a half, and unless there's a cure found, this will be part of our lives forever. And I know that with this diagnosis came sadness, some anger, a lot of anxiety, but I don't think that I realized I was teetering on the edge of losing my joy and giving into bitterness until a couple of months ago. A couple of months ago, we were having dinner with some friends. We were sitting out in their back patio. We're just chatting and catching up. And one of the friends asked me if we had rescheduled our planned cross-country, kid-free trip that we'd had to cancel in 2020 because of COVID. And when they asked me this question, I felt my mood, my body, just start to change. I felt really angry. And I heard myself say automatically, with my child within earshot, I heard myself say, well, no. No, we're not going to do that. We don't just get to do whatever we want now with our lives. So that was an awkward moment. Thankfully, our friends were really gracious, and they kind of just let that one go, and the evening went on, but I didn't let that go. I thought about what I said and how I said it the rest of that night, and I realized something. If I'm not careful, I'm going to make the choice to let my grief, to let my bitterness over this diagnosis have so much more power in our life than they ever should. Now, is it a hard diagnosis? Yes. Is it lifelong? Yes. Are there moments that are sad and scary and tense? Yes. But friends, there is so much goodness in our lives as well. Not despite type 1, but right alongside of it. Because Reese, he's still Reese. Whether his pancreas does what it's supposed to do or if it's been replaced with a little pot of insulin that he has to wear outside of his body. And we have family and friends who have made such a commitment to us to learn about diabetes, to help care for him, to give us a break so that we can do fun things still. We have a church community that said we'll do anything we need to keep Reese safe so he can participate. And we have a preschool that's gone above and beyond to make sure that he has a happy and normal experience. And I'll tell you one more thing. It's been in this season that I have seen God tend to me and the fears that I have in the most concrete way I have ever seen as an adult. So since diagnosis, my biggest fear has been that something would happen, that we would lose him, and that he wouldn't make it to adulthood. And before Reese was diagnosed, I knew exactly one person, adult person, with type 1 diabetes. And since he's been diagnosed, since that fear entered my life, it is almost comical the amount of adults with type 1 that we have met. And it's not because we're like going to diabetes conventions or are really involved in that community. It's been completely random. And I have to think that it's been sent by God. Because all of these adults we've met who have type 1, they're amazing, dynamic, healthy adults doing all these normal things that adults do. And over again, in the middle of the hard things, God keeps reminding me, Mindy, there's joy. There are things to be grateful for. There are opportunities to make community in the midst of this. There are opportunities to be part of a story that's bigger than our own. And even though this is hard, I'm not obligated to be bitter about this new part of our lives. And there's always this invitation to see joy if I will just let myself be open to it. Now, I told you, it's a work in progress. So I don't get it right every time. I need that reminder from the Holy Spirit over and over and over again. But here's what I know. When I can be reminded of joy, when I can be open to it, it's so much better than the alternative. There's so much possibility and goodness that I can't even imagine. And I don't know what you're going through. I don't know what your story is. I don't know what the thing is that feels like it's standing in the way between you and that joy that God has for you. But I do know that no matter what that is, God is right there next to you. God didn't leave Joseph in the hardest times of his life. And God surely doesn't leave us either. So even in the midst of the most difficult moment, friends, there's a spark. There's a spark of joy just waiting for us to see it clearly. Let's pray together. God, you have been faithful to us over and over again in our stories. We can see it if we just take a moment to try and have some gratitude and see clearly. Lord, I pray that in the places that we are stuck, that we would invite you in. I pray in the parts of our lives that seem so dark and without hope, that you would just shine the light on a little bit of something to be grateful for. And God, I pray that we could trust you and know that in you we can find joy. Jesus, thanks for what you do in our lives. Thanks for the way that you work in us. Amen.
Amen.